John Ruskin. Are you with us?
I'm here, John.
Okay, yeah, we've been having a nice little rally here, and people have been responding.
Wonderful.
You know, to this book and this work. And I have to mention that this is a book that can really help us clear, you know, many of those things that probably impacted on us for most of our lives.
Fine.
It's been on the bestseller table here in New York for the last 3 years or so, and it's one of those books that has endured time here.
Yeah, at East West Books in Manhattan, foreign sales are just being made, and the book, for example, was reached number one at Watkins Book Store in London, which is England's largest New Age bookstore, and was number six in sales for the year, last year. And as a result of that, it got picked up by Random House England, and it's just now being released in a major mainstream release in London beginning of April, with promotion and posters in the store and displays. So I'm really, really thrilled about that.
Well, the book endures because it has merit and value, and I think people are beginning to discover that now is the time, before we run smack dab into the year 2000. That's about time we start clearing out all of these animals in our stables, so to speak. All
yeah.
of this emotional mm-hmm. stuff, all these obstacles that keep us locked up. You know, and I think that it's time right now. This is why we've chosen this package to share with people out in our listening space, because we really feel that it's important for people to start to work through some of these issues, because we have other issues that we have to attend to, perhaps on a global basis. But the global basis is dependent upon how we fare as individuals.
Exactly. It's a reflection.
Yeah, exactly.
And a positive way to look at the global situation, you know, there is so much turmoil, and it, in a way it seems more than ever. And the way I like to interpret that is that we're just experiencing a tremendous releasing of negativity from the collective unconsciousness at this point. And it accounts for, you know, the tremendous change that we see in social institutions, in the values that we hold as a society. You know, it's just changing so fast in the last 50 years, more so than in the previous centuries, and it's very stress-inducing. So, you know, we have to acknowledge that quick changing of our very foundational assumptions is a very stress-provoking situation. But if we can view it as the time when negativity is coming up, it's a time for clearing and cleansing, we'll be able to use the situation productively instead of being abused by it.
Yes. I shudder to think how many people are locked up in institutions today who are incarcerated because they made a wrong choice as concerns their emotional situation, their status, and they didn't have these materials, they didn't have tools in which to work through some of these issues that they have. And how great it would be for people to have access to this information at an early age, you know, because I'm looking at children in school systems that are shooting each other.
Right.
You know, I'm looking at people who are abusive of their relationships to an extent where we have some really heinous crimes occur. I'm looking at countries that are conflicted with each other. I'm looking at racial groups. I'm looking at religious groups. And all of them can use, to some degree, emotional clearing. You know,
yeah.
Some level of it, some monicum of these tools. I mean, just the one about witnessing or self-acceptance or not, you know, putting yourself down. I mean, these things are so valuable,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. On the other hand, what makes me feel somewhat at peace with the situation is that I also believe that people are only able to hear at a certain point. You know, I mean, these are very, very powerful and even challenging principles that we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe only at a certain point are people actually able to hear the truth. You know, the whole idea of taking responsibility for your experience is such a challenging concept. And only if you're at a certain level of spiritual growth do you actually respond to that message.
You're right, and but you know, I also contend that there's also this 100th monkey principle, that if we have an awareness of a concept, you know, just like there years ago, it was unthinkable for a man to break that yeah. 4 minute mile.
No, I agree with you entirely.
And as soon as it happens, boom, you know, we all move to another level.
Right.
You know?
Well, I think now is the time that you know, or it could be the time, at least. I hope so. Now is the time that the ground is right for the 100 monkeys to.
We need a lot more monkeys.
Start working on themselves.
Right. No question about that. And there are all kinds of situations in our lives where we have not been able to express our uniqueness because we have so much of this residual anger or repressed feelings that seem to be blocking our way, that impose barriers and that we just can't cross. You know, I know people who have made changes and doing this type of work who now discover you know, some of the childhood joy, the spontaneity that they need in order to experience life on a different level. Would you sort of validate that? I mean, have you experienced people who have told you, well, look, you know, I've come back to drawing again, or come back to my music again, because now I don't have an emotional impediment about it?
Yeah, that's sure. That's especially getting in touch with the right brain, intuitive feeling side of ourselves, which includes the arts. You know, we're blocked on all those positive levels, positive kinds of experiences of our feeling selves, because of that same blocking that's in place to protect us from the negative stuff. So as we release those negative feelings, we move automatically into a more positive celebration of, you know, our complete abilities, and opening up on the intuitive levels with the arts is one of the first things that happens.
Now, I know you're an artist and a musician as well.
Uh-huh.
And tell me, what has it meant to you personally to have acquired these skills, and of course, you know, which led to you putting this book together, but in terms of your artwork and those things that are at the core of your, let's say, your creative right brain, what has it meant to you to just have this stuff in your life, to have access to these tools?
Well, that's, I actually described some of that in the book, but my experience as a musician earlier, actually I lived in New York for over 20 years and was active in the music business there. And I sort of burnt out in the music business. This is back in the mid-80s, I guess. And as I look back on it now, or actually as I started to understand it over 10 years ago, what was happening for me as an artist was that I was working very intently, you know, in a very devoted sense, and also being very much involved in spiritual work, which I had done from a very early age in the 60s, and had a very strong attraction to that. But art was always my main focus, composing music, and I was working in the pop music field, actually. But whenever I would complete a work, and my focus was on recording, working in the studio, and like I was making a painting, making a real beautiful finished product, and I would have just wonderful ecstatic experiences as an artist in the creation of it. But then those experiences were usually combined or followed by a kind of a depressive mode. And I'm not sure if I would have called it depression then, but I would feel myself coming down from the high, experiencing feelings of loneliness, being cut off from the audience that I was trying to find. For example, a certain part of me wanted to share the work that I was doing. And my reaction at that point, before I started becoming aware of the principles of what I was doing, was to go back to the art as a means to re-experience the high that I had previously experienced, and sort of using it as a tool for escape. And I could usually do that. I could go back to my work and get back into the high. And as soon as I would go through a cycle, feel myself going back into a natural low, I would again resist the cycle and go back to the art again. So what I was falling into was an addictive compulsiveness for creative work. And eventually, I didn't realize at the time that what I was doing was avoiding and suppressing the negative component of the artistic experience, that negative side, what we call depressive. And actually, I believe, this is interesting that you asked that, because this is the basis of my next book, which deals with arts, emotions, and creativity. And I talk about things like the manic depressive cycle, which is a current big problem in the arts and even in other places. But this manic depressiveness is what I was experiencing as an artist. But I was creating it myself by avoiding the negative side, which is a natural part of the process. But in avoiding it, I compounded that experience manifold. Mm-hmm. I suppressed it. I avoided it. I became more addicted to the positive side. I became more manic. I became more depressive when I was in the negative side. And I built up this whole kind of manic depressive experience for myself.
So you had higher highs and then deeper lows.
Right. and the highs are actually, they're not genuine highs in a certain sense also, because that manic component gives them a basis, sort of a basis in not in unreality. There's that kind of high energy, which is, you know, pushing, and can't relax. So I actually dropped out of music in the mid-80s because of this, and got deeply into a spiritual path and learned all these principles that we're talking about now, and realized that when I go into that negative side of this dualistic artistic experience, I have to just work with these negative feelings somehow. I just can't avoid them. And working with them means moving into all the levels that we talked about, recognizing on the level of awareness that it's part of the experience. You know, it's a projection in a sense that it's part of my experience. And I've been pushing it away. I've been not wanting to appreciate it or to have it. But as I moved into acceptance with it and just being with the other parts of myself that were coming up in response to this negative experience. You know, there were other parts of my own issues of not getting recognition as an artist, even back into past lives. And the pain and the isolation that I felt from that was all being projected onto my current experience as well. So I wasn't really acting or reacting off of another person. I was reacting off of myself and my own experience as an artist, trying to make it, trying to push out my work. When I recognized those feelings, you know, were being carried forward from a previous life, that I needed to just embrace them, accept them, sit with them, work with them, make myself whole by opening to those feelings, it changed my life around, and it actually started me in the career that I'm in now, as a counselor and as a writer. Powerful experience for me. And now I'm still an artist, and I find that I have a much more balanced experience as an artist. I'm not a compulsive artist anymore. You know, I'm balanced. I approach it in a reasonable way. I still experience the tremendous satisfaction from doing work. In some ways, I'm less dependent upon finding an audience, you know, but I still, there's always that part of me that wants to share. And the negative component seems to certainly be in balance. You know, after I finish a project, there's always a certain period where I'm going to go through a kind of a balancing period. I just sit with that and I experience it as a kind of a healing of my depression, if I want to use that word. That's too strong a word at this point. But for purposes of instruction, you know, I'm in that depressive mode. I just sit with that depression and bring in energy and experience a recharging, a rehealing, witnessing the depression, staying with it, watching it, and breaking my identification with it, moving back. And it's a tremendously powerful thing. So I do that, you know, if I do that, sit down, do a few of those sessions, 15 minutes for a couple times a week. It's all I have to do now to stay completely in balance in terms of my art. And I find, you know, I'm completely creative. I have too many ideas. You know, I wake up with musical ideas. I wake up with ideas about philosophy, psychology. I just can't get it all down. You know, it's, for me, it's a problem in management of my ideas. It's the complete opposite of not being in touch. You know, when you're suppressing yourself, then you're suppressing not only the subconscious, but the superconscious and the collective unconscious. You're cutting yourself off from all those parts where art comes from. And once you stop doing that, you feel tremendously in touch with yourself and the world through yourself. And creativity is just a matter of choice.
Now, in regards to, and let's say, starting with this particular process, because I want to really elaborate on some of the techniques and tools that you've incorporated in your work, you know, such as the breathing technique and alpha trancing. Can we go through some of those tools?
Yeah, we can do that. When we were discussing it last time, I was realizing that it's, we've been talking about all this using our intellectual left brain, and the essence of the work is moving into the right brain.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very different shift. It's actually the consciousness of the artist more than the consciousness of the thinker, because the artist works from the intuitive side, from the feeling side. That's one reason why I think I was so strongly drawn to the work. But it means opening up on the feeling level and going inside, and it's very hard to talk about that in a left brain way, because as you get in there, you essentially start experiencing, and it's like you can use a roadmap, sort of, or it's you're simply going with the inner flow of consciousness. And the things that happen as you gain the capacity to go inside are completely unexpected and delightful and challenging. But as I said, I've never found that we're presented with something that's too much for us to handle. But people also, in their orientations, have different ways that they perceive things. So people's experiences as they enter the alpha state, which is that very relaxed state, it's very similar to hypnosis, actually. Going into that state, have different kinds of experiences, and that's what makes the work actually interesting for me as a therapist, because when I'm working with someone and we're really getting into an experience, it's in the moment. We're not just talking theory. And feelings are coming up, and past associations are coming up, and all different kinds of images and representations are coming up. It's quite interesting, and there's always something seems to be new that keeps me intrigued as a therapist in the field.